Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 112 of Season 8 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Bubble Eat from
Hello.
Time to Rewind. Welcome back to the show, Bubba.
Good to be back.
Yeah. It's good to have you back. Minute 112 begins with Ryan getting comforted by another guy in his unit and ends with Mike starting to give his thoughts on the situation. So yesterday we ended things with Ryan being a little defiant and basically saying, I'm going to be staying here. It's going to be very difficult for you to get me out of here. This is where I'm supposed to be. This is where I want to be, and I'm here to stay. That's more or less what he's saying there. And he's not too Miller's not too happy about that. but it doesn't make a difference, to Ryan. Ryan at that point just walks away. And he goes over to a group of men that he's with. I mean, we don't really know any of their names at this point. And one of them crouches down next to him, but he also has distanced himself from Miller and his men. And he puts his hands on his head, taking in the information that he was just given, his three brothers are no longer around. Not an easy thing for him to have to be dealing with, obviously. From that perspective. But I like the fact that Spielberg has taken the time, and here we have close to 30 seconds of this minute showing Ryan's grief. And then moving from that grief into the thought pattern, I guess, of Miller from that whole thing, showing mm-hmm. that there's something very emotional going on here. This isn't something so simple. This isn't something up until now, no one's really thought of the emotional toll that this particular meeting was going to bring. I mean, even when they met Minnesota Ryan, it was a very different type of situation. But here, they see. I mean, again, obviously Minnesota Ryan was a little hysterical for obvious reasons, because somehow his elementary school or his grammar school brothers somehow found themselves in the middle of the European front somehow. But also, the reaction of Miller's men was very different. We talked about when we met Minnesota Ryan, we talked about the fact that the various facial expressions of the different men in the unit, and the only one who really said anything was Ryben, who for some reason thinks that Minnesota Ryan looks like an asshole. That was as close as it got from here. But here, Spielberg is giving us a chance to also take in the emotional impact of this very situation that Ryan is going through, because and he said it yesterday. He said, "Okay, these are the only brothers I have left." Which connects into, as you talked about yesterday, the whole idea of Brotherhood of War. The idea of Band of Brothers, which we've talked about a lot, the miniseries and the novel Band of Brothers, the fact that, the connections between Saving Private Ryan and Band of Brothers. I mean, there's a clear connection between the two, and it all has to do with the Nyland brothers. And, here we have the Ryan brothers and the way that they all are connected together. And stuff like that. Obviously, with the Nylands, the story was slightly different, but I don't remember who said it, but the idea that when you're making a movie, if you're, every second counts. You're not going to waste time on things that you shouldn't be wasting time on. At least when, obviously, when you're talking about I guess you could say quote unquote serious filmmakers, from that perspective. Let's put it this way. This movie is 169 minutes long. So it's nearly 3 hours long. And for Spielberg to take up almost half a minute dealing with this particular situation shows how important it is for him to show us this. This isn't it isn't your typical situation, and he wants us to see that there's an emotional toll here on everyone, not just on Ryan, but also on Miller, on all of Miller's men, on Ryan's compatriots, all the guys in the unit, everyone here that's at the bridge here in Rommel. They're all basically emotionally involved now that this story has been told as to why Ryan is not supposed to be there, and whatever the repercussions are going to be for that along the way. I really like the way that they frame this.
Yeah, I also really appreciate the mirroring between Ryan and Miller, and I think that's another subtle way for to connect these two characters and their journeys. And we talked a little bit about yesterday, with the almost bait and switch, but I think it's also just a mirroring of these two characters of Miller and Ryan and of what they're going through. Because whenever Ryan sits down, he puts his head down, and he one of the other members kind of tussles his hair, in a
I don't
very
know if you really
like
call it tussling it because he's pretty much got a crew cut, but close enough.
that. He doesn't, there's not much movement in the hair, but that's kind of the action that he goes for. But it's something, it's very, makes him very childlike. But then we cut back to Miller, who is just, a little ways away, and then he mirrors the same motion. He has his head down in the same position that Ryan does. We're also, the way the camera's positioned, his helmet is covering up his eyes, so we only really see his nose and his mouth. But still, Tom Hanks is able to give just this performance where it's like you can almost see what is going through his head. He has an entire like conversation in his head that we see on screen just with these subtle like nods and glances, and I think that's fantastic.
Well, it's even more than that because he doesn't have just nods and glances. You see his head moving back and forth that he's basically arguing with himself and then convincing himself that okay, like he's it's the type of thing that when you would see someone mulling over some type of decision or whatever it is, and they're saying, well, on the one hand you have this, on the other hand you have that, and talking it out on the one hand. But here what Tom Hanks does is he has this whole conversation, but the conversation is silent. But we do still see his head make the same movements where he's moving it back and forth and saying, oh, well, okay, on the one hand we have this, on the other hand we have that. And then it sort of looks like he's saying at the end, well, when you're right, you're right, and you're always right, that type of thing. It's so I like the way that they present that. And I think it's done really, really effectively by the way that they show that. So I like that a lot. And then we get more shots of Ryan getting his as you mentioned, hair tussled by it's like one of the guys is rubbing his head for good luck type of thing. And these guys are showing him what they care for him, which again is great. It goes along with what I was saying before about the emotion that they're all finding themselves taken in by this particular situation, because they must all feel for Ryan. And on the one hand, they could say, okay, it's great that he's got to take it home, but on the other hand, we do need him, and it would be great if he could stay here. But we also know that he's just lost three of his brothers. So, any of them would be thinking to themselves, well, if I lost three of my brothers, I would be thinking the same type of thing. That type of thing. I would want to go home at that point, or whatever it is. So they're torn with this whole thing. We never, throughout this entire movie, we never find out exactly how many men there are that are defending the bridge here. As we're going to be going through, I'll be counting, the number of men that are killed and stuff like that. But they never say, okay, this is the number of guys we have. Which I think is done on purpose, because then they can, give us a lot more stuntmen along the way, to show the various death scenes and stuff like that from that perspective. But it's not as if there's just 10 of them. My assumption is that we got close to 50 guys here, at least. That would be my assumption. Again, this is my guesstimation before we even go into starting to count and stuff like that. So we'll
Yeah,
have to wait
but
and
the
see about
assumption
that.
that's the rest of them are spread out, keeping watch in
Yes.
other areas.
Of course. Of course. And then the shot changes, and we see Miller walking on the bridge, and we see Mike running after him to try and catch up to him. And what's great is as soon as Mike, Tom Sizemore, reaches him, he lets out a huge puff of air. Okay, showing that his character is definitely not in great shape. I mean, you can see it by looking at him, but you also have the just this little sprint that he's doing just to get to him, he's already out of breath. And he starts walking after Miller, and he says to him, what are your orders? And Miller just turns around and looks at him and goes, Sergeant, we've crossed some strange boundary here. The world has taken a turn for the surreal. And Mike looks at him a little bit and goes, well, clearly. But the question still stands. Miller throws it back at him and goes, well, I don't know. What do you think? And Horvath responds by saying, you don't want to know what I think. No, Mike, I do. And he goes, well, and then he's going to get cut off, so he's not going to really have a way to say it. But this is another example in the movie where they show the camaraderie between the two of them. Because on the one hand, they don't call each other completely by their names. They sometimes refer to them either as captain or sergeant. And every so often they slip in, the name here and there. Like here, he goes, no, Mike, I do. But beforehand, he calls him sergeant. So it's a combination of, being formal and informal at the same time. And I like the
I'm pretty
way that they.
sure that's I mean you'll probably be able to tell me better, but Horvath is the only one that Miller calls by his first name.
Correct. Correct. Yeah, everyone else, he doesn't call any of them by their first name, even though they know their first names. Do you know the first names of all the characters?
No, in fact, I would be hard pressed, even though I watched it yesterday, to name all of their last names off the top of my head.
Okay, so you got Mellish, you got Ryben, you got Upham, you got Caparzo, Wade, Jackson, and then you got Mike, and you got Horvath and Miller. Those are the eight that started off here. Jackson's name, if I remember correctly, is Daniel. I think he's actually known as Daniel Boone Jackson, if I remember correctly. Wade is Irwin Wade. Caparzo is Adrian Caparzo. I can't remember offhand Mellish's first name. That doesn't jump out at me. Ryben also doesn't jump out at me right now. what his name is. Obviously, we know Mike's name, and we also know Miller's name. Who did I leave out? Upham. Upham's name is, I think, Timothy. He's Timothy Upham. So I'm trying to think of what the so all right, I got 6 out of 8. And I've been doing this for a little while.
Yeah, and I know that you know, Upham, Miller kind of alternates. Sometimes he calls him Upham and sometimes he calls him Corporal.
Correct. And see, I've always thought it's really funny that he basically outranks everyone else. You know, that's Riven is Richard. Richard Riven. And Mellish, I don't remember his first name. That one I'm going to cheat on. Mellish's first name is Stanley. Stanley Mellish. Okay. I wouldn't have guessed that one. That's, so, okay. Again, 7 out of 8 off the top of my head isn't so bad. Again, considering I've talked about all these guys for 111 episodes, you know, so. But again, I like the way that they go back and forth between the formal and informal when they're having these conversations. You know, sometimes they refer to them by their first name, and sometimes they refer to them by their rank, and sometimes by their last name, as you mentioned. So people are going to have to come back tomorrow to find out a little bit more about what Mike thinks about this whole situation, and you know, we'll get his opinion as to what they should be doing at this point. Now, what's really interesting is there's something. If you look at like second 26. And it goes on for a little while afterwards. There's like a word that's written on one of the buildings, and I can't really make it out. I'm assuming it's in French, so I can't really. Do you know French?
A little bit. So I took it in high school, so that's, you know, years and years ago.
Right. So I think it says SUKE or SUME. If you, it's on the left hand side of the screen. Starting at second 25, 26, something like that.
Yeah, I think the third letter is a hole in the building. So I think the third letter is missing.
No, oh, okay. So it's Sue. Sue. Yeah, that's right. So that's all I have to say about this minute. Do you have anything else you wanted to add about this one?
No, I don't think so.
All right. So every Tuesday, we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top 5 Tom Hanks performances. So once again, Bubba, why don't you start with your number 5 and work your way up?
Sure. I'm going to add, you know, I had a couple honorable mentions because I have seen a large number of Tom Hanks's movies. And I am a fan of his early comedy work, and even though it's, you know, not all of it holds up as well as you know, some of his other things, but I do want to mention Dragnet. I think that's a really fun movie, and it's one that kind of gets maligned a lot. And I also want to mention his more recent kind of comedic entry as David S. Pumpkins. It's, you know, something that even he did even have like a David S. Pumpkins Halloween special, an animated special. It's just so, it's such a one note joke, but I think he sells it so well that, and just the fact that it's Tom Hanks makes it work for me. And I know, like, it's, I feel like it's kind of a hit and miss character for a lot of people because a lot of people think it gets old really quickly, but I kind of love it, and I love just the kind of like the Sideshow Bob with the rakes. It gets repeated so often that it comes back around and becomes hilarious. But my number 5, you know, I'm gonna go with serious, and is run on Apollo 13. I think that's a fantastic movie. And at the funnily enough, I always remember it as the first scene, the first and potentially even now, I think I've seen one other one, but the first movie that I saw more than once in theaters,
Really?
because yeah, again, like I'm much more interested in seeing a new movie than seeing a movie again. And so it just happened to be that I watched it, I think with one of my friends, and then I took a trip to see my older sister, to like spend a week with her, and she took me to see it. So I didn't have as much of a choice the second time around, but it was still a good movie to watch twice. And then my number four is kind of, I kind of look at it as a dramedy and Castaway, because he does get a lot of comedic moments throughout that movie, but overall it's a great drama, and just the way he's able to carry the entire second act of that movie by himself is just a feat that not too many actors can pull off. And my number three, again, kind of going back to his early comedy days, is Big. There's not too many adult actors that can pull off a believable performance as a 12/13-year-old.
Yeah,
And
I was
I
shocked
think
when
he.
someone told me that and anyone who's been listening to this knows what I'm talking about, that they wanted Robert De Niro to play the character at the beginning.
Yeah, that's, I cannot imagine that movie.
No.
And then my number two is probably my favorite baseball movie of all time is A League of Their Own. I love him in that movie. And my number one movie is I probably call it my favorite comic book adaptation of all time. And that is Road to Perdition, and that's he kind of plays against type, as in, I mean, he is kind of not a killer but a soldier in this movie, but to see Tom Hanks as a hired assassin basically in this movie is so great, but then he still has this Tom Hanks fatherly presence, with the whole movie of him protecting his son, and it's just a fantastic movie, and it's visually great as well. Like I can definitely, coming into it knowing that it's a comic book adaptation, I can really see that, see kind of the pages brought to life, even though I wasn't familiar with the comic book beforehand.
Oh wow, interesting. And you're the comic book guy, so I'm surprised you'd never come across that beforehand.
Well, I'm a comic book movie guy. My actual comic
Well,
book
this movie
knowledge
is a
is
comic
very
book,
minimal.
right? But it is a
I'm only
comic
interested
book
in the adaptations,
movie.
not the original source material.
No, that I realize, but so did you see Road to Perdition when it came out in 2002?
No, I was it was completely off my radar. I didn't discover it until I was doing my my Flights, Tights, and Movie Nights blog, and I came across that on my giant list, and so whenever I got to it, I just immediately fell in love with it.
Okay, that's fair. Excellent. Thank you very much for that list. Would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Sure. Let's see. I think, I kind of, I in a little way, I guess the cat will be out of the bag by the time this comes out. But I just recently started a brand new podcast, and if you listen to it and the follow-up episode, you'll understand why I'm choosing today to promote it. It's called Real Crime Scenes, and that's real as in REEL, and I think it's a fun concept for a podcast where what I do is I take the plot of a movie and I kind of dissect the crime element of it, and I kind of pick out the plot and I turn it into a true crime style podcast where I discuss the movie, or well, I not so much discuss the movie, but I kind of explain the plot of the movie based on the crimes that are committed, and in the style of a true crime podcast. So I kind of focus on the what's, but what I do is I change the name, kind of like Dragnet. I change the names of the characters and, maybe some of the important, the notable scenes and things in order to protect the identity of the movie. So you
Oh,
can
wow.
listen to this true crime episode and hopefully be able to figure out what movie I'm talking about, but I don't
You
reveal
reveal it? You don't reveal it at all?
not until the next episode. And so 2 weeks
Ooh.
later, I reveal it, the name of the movie that I discussed, and then we have a more typical movie type discussion of the movie that I talked about in the previous episode.
Oh wow. And do you give out prizes to listeners that are able to guess what movie it is?
Well, as of right now, the prize is that they will get a shout out in the follow-up episode for the first person that correctly identifies the movie.
Oh wow. Very cool. That is a very, very cool concept. I'm actually looking forward to listening to that.
Yeah, as of recording, I have the first episode up, and then the follow-up episode is coming out soon. But by the time this goes out, hopefully I should have the two full movies in terms of the true crime episode and the follow-up episode should be out.
Oh wow. Well, I'm you got me very, very curious about that. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, and that's and again, that's Real Crime Scenes, REEL, as in a film reel, and it's I've gotten a lot of great feedback from it, and I'm hoping it takes off. Kind of like right now, every person that I've told the concept to has really been struck by it, so I think I'm onto something.
Sounds like it. Definitely sounds like it. All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this.
Solitude. You